Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Sarah Main, and she's joining us from Sydney, Australia, and we'll be talking about her work in her new book, Conscious Confidence, Use the Wisdom of Sanskrit to Find Clarity and Success. Sarah's whole life has centered around studying, practicing, and teaching higher consciousness and self-awareness. In 1971, at the age of 10, she began on her spiritual journey. She was introduced to mantra meditation and other spiritual disciplines and techniques. By 13, she was studying Sanskrit, and in her early 20s, she was teaching practical self-awareness, philosophy, meditation, and Sanskrit to both children and adults. A few years ago, seeing a need in the world, she was inspired to take all she has learned and reformulated it into a simple, enjoyable, and practical program of conscious confidence. Since then, Sarah has expanded her conscious confidence program into a full-length book, and she has coached individual clients and presented her ideas to group seminars and business owners. For more information, you can visit her website, which is consciousconfidence.com.
There we go. So, joining us today from Australia, again, is Sarah Main. Hello, Sarah. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Robert. It's lovely to talk to you.
Thank you. It is my pleasure. I am so anxious to hear about Sanskrit and how it can help us in today's world and conscious confidence. But let's first start with Sanskrit. That was the one thing that really captured my attention. And it's obviously something that caught your attention at an early age. So can you tell us about how that came about?
Well, my parents were keen seekers. They came from England after the war, and they were keen seekers of wisdom, knowledge, and they started philosophy classes that offered philosophy and then meditation, and that led on to Sanskrit. And I was younger, nine, and then I noticed that they were just so excited and discussing things and, you know, in between just normal suburban life. Dad put on a suit every day and went off to the office and, you know, Mum was at home, etc. So nothing on the outside was any different. But, and so naturally I was just interested, I was keen, and there was something receptive, excuse me, in me. And then at the age of 10, they said, well, would you like to come along? And I said, yes, please, I'm there. So that was how it started. I didn't understand everything the adults were saying in the lecture, in the classes, and yet there was something in me that just connected. I was sort of communing at another level, even though I didn't understand the conversation. Obviously, as I got older, I started to get
right.
It. Right. And then there was meditation and then Sanskrit. And look, I guess I've got a facility, an ear for languages because I loved music. And Sanskrit is very musical. I just loved everything about it. And, you know, it was a duck to water. And then as I proceeded with that, the thing I really loved especially was the etymology of the words, the wisdom that was uncovered when you went deep into the meaning of a word and how that then informed and illuminated your understanding of that word in English. It just seemed to clean away a whole lot of limits in your understanding, and that's really how I've linked up Sanskrit and how it applies to everyday life.
Wow. So for the listeners who don't know what Sanskrit is, would you mind kind of sharing that with us? Because, you know, there's probably a lot of people who may not have been exposed to it at all.
Well, yes. I could answer the question that there's Sanskrit and there's Sanskrit. Okay.
So,
the first answer to Sanskrit is it's an ancient Indian language. Okay, so and it's ancient, you know, thousands and really timeless, but you know, thousands of years old. Let's say that. And in a linguistic sense, it is a root language. English is part of the vast family of Indo-European languages. So you have the Romance languages like French and Italian, all those languages. You have the Germanic languages, and there's many other groups of languages. And English falls into all of that, right? Has Germanic links and Romance links and so on. So, and Sanskrit is, I'm not going to say the root of Indo-European languages, but it is certainly a root, a primary root or source of the Indo-European language family. And so English, when we're speaking English like now, we are actually directly connected to Sanskrit, because there are so many words in Sanskrit that are the root of English words.
So you would think it was a universal, is that why you call it a universal? Feel that it might be considered a universal language
I said there's Sanskrit and there's Sanskrit.
Oh, okay.
So the second Sanskrit
is
Sanskrit reflects very purely universal, it is a universal language. It reflects the nature of the universe very beautifully and very purely and very fully. And the word Sanskrit or Sanskrita actually means pure and perfectly formed. And I liken it to when we're still and open and receptive and in the present moment, that knowledge that we just know what is needed right now, that full knowledge is always pure and perfectly formed. And if we spot it, that knowledge is known before it's then translated by our mind into the language that we speak, so that we can then take action and understand and think and so on. It's just a knowing, and it's always pure and perfectly formed. It never leads us astray. And I'd like to say that is Sanskrit as well.
Wow. So, I mean, it has such double impact, you know, in both areas of viewing what it is. So it's basically an ancient language. So now is it a language that is currently in use, or is it simply historical?
From a linguistic point of view, they call it a dead language because it's like Latin. It isn't changing. It's like English is evolving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the English that my parents spoke, you know, pre-war, Second World War and afterwards, you know, there's so many linguistic features and so on that have changed in the last 50 years, for example. So English is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Sanskrit, like Latin and ancient Greek and so on, it doesn't change. So they call it linguistically, it's a dead language. But yes, it is still used. It's studied widely, vastly, everywhere. There are universities in India where the instruction, the teaching is given in Sanskrit.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And it may not necessarily be a subject like Sanskrit, but the teachers will be giving the instruction in Sanskrit. So it is still very much alive and well. And, you know, many, many universities around the world are teaching it. There are Sanskrit schools, even in Sydney, teaching to young children, typically within the Indian community, but it's not exclusive.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, I've always heard, whenever Sanskrit has come up in conversations I've been involved with, there's always such a reverence that seems to, you know, surround it. And you know, it's that was the reason I was asking if it was still utilized, you know, new things written, you know, because then if it has that power of balance or that universal aspect, it would seem to me that that would be a wonderful way to kind of promote, you know, what we want as far as, you know, that universal connectedness and that kind of thing.
Yes. Oh, yes. If you go back to the actual meaning of Sanskritar, which means pure and perfectly formed, it has all its knowledge, all the knowledge and the energy is intact. It hasn't been changed, altered, weakened in any way, diluted. So when you connect with the meaning, you get the full impact. It just depends how open and receptive you are, and that will depend on whatever limits you may have in your thinking. You can connect fully. It's like plugging into the original powerhouse. And in fact, this is one of the beautiful things about going back to what does Sanskrit say about a word or a concept or something, is that it, in the light of the universality and the potency of Sanskrit, it can shed some light on where the limits are within yourself. So it's like putting your own thought processes through the washing cycle, and you can clear those out, and so, you know, it's freedom all around, which is beautiful.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be able to do that. So now, what are you doing right now in the area of Sanskrit? I understand that you also are a teacher.
I was a teacher. I'm not teaching now in the classroom, but I was a teacher for 30 years, yes.
Good to move on. I know. I have many former teachers who just always love that past chapter in their lives. So, okay. So now let's talk about conscious confidence. It's,
yes,
you know, the name of your book, the name of your website. It's obviously what your focus, your passion is. So would you mind sharing with the listeners just what is conscious confidence?
Conscious confidence. Well, conscious confidence is that deep connection from within yourself. It's that confidence, that strength, that resilience that rises from within yourself because you're connected to yourself, your own presence. Beyond thought and all of that sort of thing. It's just a sense of yourself. It doesn't mean that when you face something unfamiliar, you're not going to feel a little bit sort of, oh, what's this? All the normal feelings rise and fall, and yet you can be unmoved by them. And this is a conscious thing. It's not dependent on a familiarity, you know, because often a lot of our confidence is based on things that we've done and we're well practiced at and familiar with, and that's fine. I address that in the book. That's a perfectly fine thing, and we all need that. And, you know, then people, you know, if you don't feel like you're a confident person, you look at other people who seem to be confident, and, you know, they might be a bit brash and out there. And you think, wow, how did they end up being like that? But that sort of confidence often can dissolve unless the circumstances are right. Those sort of people can go to water when challenged in a certain way. So I'm suggesting that conscious confidence is that confidence that isn't dependent on external factors being right. It's not really dependent on a particular personality type, and it's certainly not dependent on having to be familiar and well practiced at something. It's just that confidence, that resilience of showing up to whatever life brings you and being able to thrive regardless of what the circumstances are.
Yeah. You know, the difference, the distinction between conscious confidence and kind of a, you know, as you were talking about it, I got, you know, the visual of a boisterous kind of confidence kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, it was, you know, so, to me, some people like try very hard to project confidence, but, you know, sometimes it, you know, I've noticed that you don't have to really be out there to being confident. You don't have to kind of be out there with it. I mean, you know, when you're talking about conscious confidence, you're talking about that internal confidence, that one's sure of oneself, correct?
Yes, yes. You're just sure of yourself because you're connected to yourself and you're connected to your real presence. You know, and looking, all of this came about, I took up playing the harp after I finished teaching. I'd always wanted to learn the harp since I was 10. And my husband said, right, come on, now's the time. This is 40 years later.
Okay.
And so he wanted to take up Spanish classes. He could speak Spanish and he wanted to refresh his Spanish. And he said, well, I'm not going to start Spanish unless you take up harp. You've been talking about it for 40 years.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that wonderful? So that forced me to track down a harp teacher and so on. And I started lessons and, you know, enjoying them. And my harp teacher ran a harp workshop weekend, and I hadn't been playing very long at all, so I was really a real beginner. And she said, go on, you know, there'll be lots of other harpers, but just come along anyway. So I went along for this two-day workshop, and one of the sessions was a psychologist talking about stage fright and performance anxiety. And I thought, oh, this would be interesting. So, and this was a room full with probably about 30 or 40 harpers, many of whom professional or retired professionals, concert harpers, and, you know, students as well. And I'm sort of sitting there, really a beginner. And they were talking in the course of the session with the psychologist. They were talking about, you know, it was just a given, a known thing that a lot of concert performers and so on these days are prescribed medication, you know, beta blockers and things, to overcome performance anxiety, to get through the performance. And honestly, the sound you heard was my jaw hitting the floor. I had no idea. I mean, I understand performance anxiety, but, you know, I get that. But I just had no idea that that's what people were doing to get through it now, was taking pills, basically. And I thought, there's got to be another way. Like, they were all sounded defeated and, you know, well, we just have to take the pills because we can't think of another way.
You know? Wow.
And they were doing some behavioral things and some, you know, working on their fight flight responses and so on. And I started really looking into it, and I went into the neuroscience, and I really, like, I knew a bit from teaching, but I really delved into it, spent some months looking into this, reading books, listening. And then I thought to myself, what is going on when you are confident, when you are actually confident? What is happening in the energy within yourself? And as soon as I asked that question, I thought, isn't that, go back to the Sanskrit, because Sanskrit, the meanings are contained in what you do. It's experiential rather than conceptual. That's one of the primary differences with Sanskrit. And I've been trained to do that, so, you know, to really delve into meaning that way. So I looked up, I just went back to Sanskrit and discovered there were 12 words for confidence. And I it took me about 5 or 6 months, I went right back to the derivations and so on. And then I had vast amounts of information, and I laid it all out on the dining room table after 6 months and said to my husband, honey, what am I looking at here? There's something here. And he said, right, let's start grouping them. And as soon as we started doing that, it was just like the lights went on in my head, bing, like that. And I thought, what is this called? What is this called? And I went into the kitchen, and about 2 minutes later, it just flashed into my mind, conscious confidence. And that's how it started. I mean, I was literally given that name, conscious confidence. Wow. I didn't think it up.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you know, I mean, it sounds like that whole process, you're being very guided, you know, throughout the process.
Guided.
It seems. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt that way, yeah.
Yeah. So now the conscious confidence, there's a FUSE program, F-U-S-E program?
Yeah, the FUSE program, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that. What does FUSE stand for?
Your FUSE program, the F-U-S-E, stands for Focusing, Uniting, Simplifying, and Energizing. And that's the core, what I call the fourfold energy of conscious confidence. And that is the all the Sanskrit put into those four groups. Because when I started grouping them, they fell quite naturally and obviously into four distinct characteristics of what I would call energies, sort of fundamental energies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a focusing. There's some words in Sanskrit that mean confidence, and they require focusing your attention. And one of the words is dridha pratyaya, which means a firm belief, right? And to have firm belief, you need, and firm confidence, you need to be focused. You need to be able to pay attention and give your full attention and not be distracted. So there's an element of focusing. The second one is uniting, and one of the Sanskrit words is ashabandha, which means a bond of hope, confidence, and trust.
Mm.
And that's an element of confidence. So there's a uniting, there's a bringing together of diversity or disparate elements into an underlying united whole. So you can't be confident if you're divided within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That way. You can't be confident if you can't actually pay attention. So there's the focusing, uniting. Then there's the S, is simplifying, which is letting go of the non-essentials and staying with what's essential. And that's one of the Sanskrit words is asandeha, which means an absence of accumulations in the body, mind, and heart. And if you have accumulations, Sanskrit describes it as a covering over, a smearing over, which produces doubt, like a fogginess. Whereas if you're clear, then you're confident. And that clarity comes from not accumulating unnecessary things. So there's a simplifying element. And then there's an energizing element. And words like vishwasa, which come from shwas in Sanskrit, which means to breathe. They literally come from prana, to breathe, the breath. And that's taking dynamic, creative action, living enthusiastically. So real confidence, a conscious confidence, has this element of focusing, uniting, simplifying, and energizing. And it's like a jewel that has facets of it rather than separate things. It's just different elements to real confidence. And those energies are there in confidence. And that's what FUSE is. And then the FUSE program has two other elements, which is that their FUSE is founded on your core values, what do you really value, and your attitude. And I looked up what Sanskrit said about values and attitude, and that was incredibly illuminating. So there's six steps: core values, positive attitude, focusing, uniting, simplifying, and energizing.
Wow. Now, you have this in a form of a program?
Yes. Yes.
So
what
it's does, all... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go on.
I was going to say... So what,
it's all laid out. Well, it's in the book, but it's all laid out with what the Sanskrit says. There are simple teaching stories, traditional teaching stories, which are simple and delightful, and yet the message is clear and profound. And we need all of these elements to really sort of get the knowledge. And then there's some contemporary accounts of people I've worked with or experiences I've had, children I've taught that have demonstrated and provide a good contemporary example of what I'm talking about. This is for everything in the book, actually. And then there are practices. There's a starter practice, an intermediate practice, and an advanced practice, because there's no change without some effort, some practice.
Wow. Well, it's good that you have different levels, because, you know,
yes.
it's people can, you know, graduate in their, you know, as they develop their focus and develop their future.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. I guess it's the teacher in me. I wouldn't just give one practice because, you know, when you're teaching in a classroom, of course you're going to have children that need support, you know, and you're going
right.
to have children who are sort of the middle of the road, and then there are ones who can go faster. So I was used to juggling all levels all the time. So it just occurred to me, you really need the start, and then you can build as you go.
Yeah.
Far more encouraging that way. It can be a bit disheartening if you don't feel there's an entry point for yourself.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, and again, I think people, you know, when you're trying to teach something, who better than teacher, you know, for many years? I mean, because you know what it takes to grab the attention of a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
You know, and with yours, you're talking, you know, it would be a very, very wide group, you know, So now, when people get the book, Conscious Confidence, they're going to be getting that that program, which includes practices and stories and insights and all that, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Thanks.
And the book's available in print copy, ebook, and also audiobook.
Great. And also, just want to let people know, too, they can check on your website, which is consciousconfidence.com, and you have that
That's there as well.
So let's take just a quick break, and then when we come back, I kind of want to just get your take on, you know, the current focus, you know, on mindfulness, you know, has become quite popular, and maybe the transition that meditation has taken. Okay, so we're going to take just a real quick break. Okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Questions?
You're welcome. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is Sarah Main, and she's joining us from Australia. And we're talking about her book and program, Conscious Confidence, Use the Wisdom of Sanskrit to Find Clarity and Success. And again, you can find out more about Sarah and her work and her book by visiting her website, which is consciousconfidence.com. Okay, with that, we're back. Sarah?
Hello.
Hello. Okay, so, you know, with the current increased awareness when it comes to the idea of mindfulness, meditation, and you know, in the the focusing, you know, aspect seems to be becoming more, I guess, mainstream or looked at. What's your view on the current attention given to mindfulness?
Well, it's very encouraging. When I was growing up, I started philosophy classes and everything in 1971. I was 10 years old. There was nothing, you know, it was very unusual, and, you know, I was too shy to speak about it really at high school because it was totally unmainstream. This is pre-internet and computers and everything. So, and there was a certain residual, I don't know the word, how to describe it, but there was still certain elements of structure within the society. There was sort of holdovers, I guess, that just sort of held everybody together. And then as those slowly dissolved, rightly so, you know, just had its time, and the rise of the internet and, of course, then more lately social media, as a sort of almost a counterbalance to that, people have seen the need to actually practice being present. And we call it mindfulness. I mean, and that term didn't exist when I was growing up. But, you know, to actually be present, to bring your whole self to what you're doing, shouldn't actually be seen as some special, really, some special thing that you have to practice. One would hope that that's just a normal state. But these days, things have slipped a bit, and we are... more distracted, there are more distractions, you know, and they've now got to bring in rules and regulations to stop people using their phones whilst they're driving, which was, you know, inconceivable when I learnt to drive. You just drove.
Right.
There wasn't anything else. The biggest thing you did was put the radio on once you were confident enough not to have your eyes glued on the road the whole time. But, you know, things have changed, and it seems like the rise of mindfulness, and, of course, people's stress levels increased, and it just seemed to be sort of a natural antidote, and I think it's essential and very important. And it is wonderful that it's now mainstream, whereas when I was growing up, it was absolutely not mainstream.
Yeah, I agree that it's you know, the word, you know, I mean, I've been doing the radio show for about 10 years, so... You know, I've noticed, like, in the last 5 years or so, it's just a lot more attention to it. And it's not as, when people aren't kind of brushing it off as, you know, maybe if it's ancestors, to, you know, for that mindfulness or that meditative kind of state. It seems that people are, maybe because of that hurriedness, recognizing that it's something that is important, or maybe that's what's missing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit as a sort of an add-on now. It seems to me it's a little bit being retrofitted, you know, and we've got apps and things like that. And, you know, to be present is actually a natural state. That is natural. That's how we're designed, and yet... that gets covered over and forgotten because we're not taught to stay present. And in fact, you know, and I don't want to sound like harping on, but when I see, you know, prams and strollers these days that are now built with little stands to put the iPad so that the child can be watching something on an iPad as they're being pushed along the street in a pram or a stroller or something. You know, this is facilitating a level of distractedness. It's inculcating it. And I would guarantee, I would venture to say that when that child grows up, they're going to then have to download some sort of app to teach themselves to be present and actually be able to look at nature or whatever and not filter it through what they've seen on a screen because they've been fed that from young.
To me that's really I'm amazed too when I see, you know, the iPads in front of the very young children. And, you know, and they get very adept quickly. But so it's one of those things where it's, you know, they're really kind of being raised on that instant gratification kind of feedback, you know, that
yes.
that's going to create some challenges, I would think.
Yes. I mean, it is a, if you look at levels of consciousness, it is a lower level of consciousness. I don't want to sound sort of judgmental, but if you just,
we utilize all levels of consciousness, you know, I guess, you know, throughout the day. So, I mean, you know, some of them have value, you know, different types of values for different types of consciousness.
Yeah, but if it's that's right. But at a young age, if that's your sort of soul, you know, one of your primary sources of stimulation is at that lower level, that's where you'll kind of hang out most of the time rather than feeling comfortable being still and present, which is a fine, you know, just sort of appreciating nature, being open, receptive and present is a finer, higher level of consciousness. And as you say, we need to utilize them all, but most of the time we sort of dwell in that distracted state. We're dwelling at a more, just a lower level. Our considerations are more limited. And you know, it just starts young, and that's unfortunate, I think. But fortunately, though, the good side is the mindfulness and meditation is more freely and readily available, which is great.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. So now I understand that you do coaching as well.
Yes.
You know, both individual, small group, executive, and team coaching. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the work that you do in that particular area?
Sure. Well, individuals, it just depends on the nature of what has prompted them to reach out for coaching. And, you know, then, of course, it's very much dependent on following what the client wants and needs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm bringing all my experience and knowledge, and certainly bringing in the Sanskrit without sort of making it into a Sanskrit lesson for them. The Sanskrit is to inform a deeper level of consideration and knowledge, and it's very powerful and practical. So that's with the individual. And then the group coaching and small teams and so on, again, it depends on the nature of what needs to be addressed. But in groups, you can be more practical and run exercises that everyone can do either on their own and then work in pairs or small groups. So it can be a lot more interactive in that regard. And, you know, and that tends to be the nature of the sort of coaching I do. And, you know, it's working on team building and, you know, a lot of it is learning to actually focus and, they're probably the key things. And find some real confidence and self-assurance in what they're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's... The coaching can be identifying the needs of the client would be, you know, like one of the most critical way in you know, being able to identify if he can help. So now with your particular coaching, is it like people sign up for what, maybe a particular period of time, they come to you with an issue, want you to help. How does that kind of, how does it work? They just basically come to you and say, I'm in need of fill in the blank, and then you direct?
Yes. Basically, yes. I need fill in the blank is basically a good description. And then I've found over the time, I used to do, say, four session coaching programs or eight sessions.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed that the more focused and I've got better at this, I can usually help a client get to the heart of the issue in one, say, I have a 90-minute session with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get really focused on a particular point of that's really a linchpin in the situation. And then I do a follow-up. So it's usually one really solid session and then a follow-up and maybe a follow-up after that is how I work, and then they call me as and when they need it after that.
Okay.
Because the idea, I always know when we've got to the real nub of the issue, because the energy is released and they're motivated to take action. If there's no action rising when we get to a certain point, it means we haven't really got to the real point, the real heart of the issue. Because it's a natural instinct in a human being that when we get to a point, the energy rises and the first thing we want to do is take action. It's natural. Give expression to it. And if there's still a reluctance, that means there's something in the way and we haven't quite got there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would think, you know, that is the one challenge of having a particular set of sessions, because, you know, some people progress differently, you know, and
they do.
Don't fit into those those particular parameters. So that's really the best. I agree.
Yeah.
So now I also understand that you have a radio podcast.
Yes, I do.
Tell us about that. I'd like to hear about that. I love to talk to other podcasters.
I have at the moment there's two shows a month that I've, you know, anyway, every month there's podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. So transformationtalkradio.com. And if you search me there, Sarah Main, Conscious Confidence Radio, my shows are all there. And I was actually doing a whole show yesterday on simplifying, because I'm going through the whole FUSE program. So I've been doing one show per element of the FUSE program. So, yes, I've been doing that for a while and talking about Sanskrit and the FUSE program and all sorts of things related to all of this. And I've been doing these podcasts since 2000 and, I think it's 2017.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun. You really get to, you know, and that's a wonderful way for you to be able to get out to the FUSE aspect and to get people interested. So now, I guess one last question. If you were to, you know, if there was something that you would wish that the readers would take away from Conscious Confidence, what is it you hope that will spark in the reader?
That's a great question. I would wish that people, a reader or a listener, would ask themselves the big questions, to open up themselves to some new knowledge. And that question can be, who am I? What is my purpose? Am I present now? Just ask a question and, in a sense, not even expect an answer. But the very asking of the question opens ourselves up to some new possibilities and new opportunities and a connection with yourself, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now, I did notice that you are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so people can join you there. And I believe I'm following you on two of the three. I'm going to get that Instagram a little bit later. I don't usually do Instagram a whole lot, but I've been trying to focus a little bit more on that. But I'll be sure to join you there. And so, listeners, if you use those platforms, be sure to join Sarah on that. Well, Sarah, I really want to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed speaking with you and look forward to following your work.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and thank you for the great questions. I love good questions.
Good. I'm glad you thought they were good. So, again, everyone, I wanted to remind you that today's special guest has been Sarah Main, and we've been talking about Conscious Confidence. Use the wisdom of Sanskrit to find clarity and success. And again, you can find out more by visiting Sarah's website, which is ConsciousConfidence.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at byteradio.me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.